It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio on a very happy Sunday morning. The first Sunday morning of November. I hope you remember to put your clocks back. Aside from that, the reason it's such a happy Sunday morning is the Chicago Cubs are world champions, as all of you know who are listening. And if you didn't know that, I think maybe you've been in a cave for the last few days. What a time for the city of Chicago. And as a lifelong Chicagoan, I'm going to take a little liberty this morning from the Great Outdoors Show and talk about what is the Great Outdoors, and that is Wrigley Field, which is obviously one of baseball's great shrines, one of the great places in all sports to go watch a baseball game. So what I'm going to talk about just for a moment this morning is a personal journey to Wrigley Field, which began at the age of 10 when I played hooky on opening day. The year happened to be 1969. And I woke up. It was a beautiful morning. I told my mother I wasn't feeling well. We lived in downtown Chicago. I'm 10 years old. My mother leaves the house. I feel much better, much faster. And I walk from essentially the corner of Michigan Avenue and Oak Street at 10 years old to Wrigley Field. I had been there the year before, my first Cub game. I don't really know how long the walk took me. I had $5 in my pocket, and I walked from Oak Street and Michigan Avenue to Clark and Addison. And I arrived there. I bought my ticket. If my memory serves me correctly, the ticket cost about $2.50, and I sat back in the grandstand, the general grandstand, under the upper deck in right field, and I watched the Cubs game, and then I walked home. Of course, when I got home, it wasn't such a happy welcome for me. But that was my first introduction to Wrigley Field, and having been a Cubs fan ever since. I had the great pleasure of going to the first night game ever held at Wrigley Field. Of course, the first night game was actually rained out. The first night game was the night after, but all of us who went to the first night game have those hats that said opening night Wrigley Field. And I wore that hat to the World Series game last Saturday night, which was, obviously, as we all know, not the happiest of nights for Cubs, but it was an incredible experience to be at a World Series. As for those of you who might have gone, you well know, and for those of you who didn't go, I know you've seen the pictures and heard about it. It was, even though the Cubs lost badly, it was an experience to be in the ballpark and sitting in my favorite place, left field bleachers, when the game was played. So that brings me to where I am now, game 7. Many of you watched it in person at a bar with friends. Some of you went to Cleveland. I was on an airplane. All of my life waiting for the Cubs to get to the World Series to have the chance to win, and I'm on an airplane. My plane was an hour late. I landed in Salt Lake City in the ninth inning to see the score is 6-6. But in Salt Lake City, unlike Chicago, it's not a baseball town, and they don't have baseball bars. The airports, when they close, they close. And they literally shuttered the only bar in the Salt Lake airport at 9:30 at night and threw us all out, which meant I had to go to my car to watch the end of the World Series game in a way that, fortunately, modern technology enables us to do. I called my family, and I said, please FaceTime me to my son, and put your iPhone up against the television so I can watch the World Series through your iPhone back to my iPhone. And I pulled over in my rental car on the shoulder of the highway in Salt Lake City in a construction zone, and I watched the 10th inning via FaceTime on an iPhone, which for me was as special as it could be, because there I was actually with my family, although thousands of miles away, watching the Cubs game through an iPhone. So we all have experiences, I'm sure, about what happened with the Cubs in the World Series. That's my little experience, and I thought I would share it with you because as a Cub fan, you all know the highs and lows, and now, obviously, the ultimate high. And when it comes to the great outdoors, Wrigley Field is one of those places where I think we all can say, when you're in Wrigley Field, you are indeed in the great outdoors. So moving on from the happy news of the world champion Chicago Cubs, I'm going to move on to what's going to happen on Tuesday. And goodness knows what's going to happen on Tuesday. We'll find out soon enough. But I thought I would leave you with this thought as you head into Election Day, both on a national level as well as on a local level. Nationally, I talked a little bit last week about the impact of the hunting and fishing community on the American economy. So if you're interested in the American economy and helping it grow, hunting and fishing is actually a very important part of that. $90 billion is the total income of the U.S. economy from hunting and fishing. And according to the report that was published out of the Department of Interior, that $90 billion is more than the combined global sales, get this, more than the combined global sales of Apple's iPhone and iPad in the same year. So if you think about that, all the talk about technology and Apple and iPad, the impact of hunting and fishing is larger on an annual basis than the annual sales of Apple's iPhone and iPad. That's how big hunting and fishing is. A little bit of a closer look. Wisconsin, interestingly, is the second highest state in the country with nearly 900,000 people who hunt. Nationwide, there are almost 40 million Americans over the age of 16 who hunt and fish. If you include under hunting and fish, under 16, it's more than 40 million Americans. The combined revenues of $90 billion spent on hunting and fishing, that's the same as the combined revenues for the United States TV broadcast and cable network in entirety. That includes NBC, Fox, ESPN, Discovery Channel. The whole broadcast industry's revenues are $90 billion, are not $90 billion. So hunting and fishing is a big deal. And if every registered sportsman and woman in America who hunts and fishes voted, we would make up 30% of the people who cast their votes. And yet, in this election, not a single word, as I've said repeatedly, has been talked about on conservation, hunting, fishing, national parks, the future of outdoor recreation. We are one-third of the voting bloc in America, which is why the NRA advertises so heavily, which is why in state-level races, hunting and fishing plays such an important role. So on the national level, I don't have any idea what either candidate is going to do for the future of hunting and fishing because neither one of them has spoken about it. So hunting and fishing is big business in America. And I don't know which, as most of us don't, how either of the presidential candidates are going to come down on the future of hunting and fishing. However, the track record of the last 8 years, and this is not a political statement, this is a factual statement. The Department of Interior has increasingly stopped management of the National Wildlife Refuges. It is more difficult today to have access in America to hunting and fishing lands. The level of regulation has increased substantially. So if that trend continues in the next 8 years, we will continue to see our ability to hunt and fish restricted. We'll continue to see more and more regulations on the ability of legal, lawful individuals to be able to purchase firearms to go hunting and fishing or clay target shooting. Neither candidate has spoken about this on what they would do for managing our national wildlife refuges, improving our national parks, improving access. But the track record of the past 8 years has not been a good one from the current administration. And if that carries over to a future administration, we are going to see a continued decline in the ability of American sportsmen and women to enjoy the great outdoors and for us to enjoy our national parks, which are not being maintained. So we are at a critical point. On a state level, a lot of these things are local. And when you go to the ballot box on Tuesday morning, think about which candidate you're going to vote for has an interest in the future of outdoor recreation and our outdoor economy in America. Very simply, $90 billion is a lot of money. And in Illinois, it's a big business. Rural The rural economy of Illinois is driven, aside from agriculture, it is driven by hunting and fishing. Deer hunting in Illinois is a big, big business, as is fishing. Fishing on the Illinois River, fishing downstate at the Corps of Engineers Lakes, fishing on Lake Michigan. The candidates that you're going to vote for should have an interest in the lifestyle that those of us who care about the great outdoors and outdoor recreation are interested in. So I'm not going to go down the Illinois ballot or the Wisconsin ballot or any of those. I'm just simply going to say, when we go to vote on Tuesday, we should think about who's going to really be interested in the future of outdoor recreation in America. I thank you for listening. This is Charlie. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Thank you for being with me. It's Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I'm going to talk now about what I think is the unintended consequences of ill-thought-out efforts by those who may be outside of the normal outdoor community to do well for the outdoor community, because they mean well, but the end results really are not very good. And what I'm talking about right now is the reintroduction of wolves into the American West. And before anyone gets excited about my saying we shouldn't have wolves, that's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is this was one of the least thought out long-term consequences to wildlife management in the West. And in particular, the issue I'm going to talk about today, which is in Idaho, is actually related to wolf management across the West. And in Minnesota and Wisconsin, where wolves are increasing in population. And eventually, you're going to hear the howling of a wolf in Illinois. There won't be many of them. So the issue for Illinois is not as extreme as it is in Wisconsin and Minnesota. But in the West, in Idaho, the legislature authorized $400,000 a year for the lethal wolf control. Ranchers and people who hunt think that's a great idea. Individuals who want to hear the howling of a wolf or occasionally see a wolf are up in arms over it, literally, legislative arms, that is, and are filing lawsuits. So what happened was there were no wolves in Idaho until they were reintroduced in 1995. They had been wiped out early in the 20th century. And it's been controversy in Idaho, Wyoming, all of Colorado, Montana, all across the West, where wolves now have been reintroduced. There are 1,900 wolves in Idaho today. That's their estimate. And the Fish and Game Department now has a $400,000 annual fund to control the wolf population, which is being used with revenues from people largely who hunt and fish. The reintroduction of wolves in Idaho was very controversial, as it was across the West. They have been taken off the endangered species list. And since they've been taken off the endangered species list, roughly 2,200 wolves have been shot in Idaho in order to control their population and to control their impacts on sheep, cattle, and also their impact on ungulates, deer, and elk, which is a big business in Idaho. If the deer and elk population in Idaho or Montana or Colorado or Wyoming or Utah, any of the western states, takes a significant decline, that is going to be a huge economic loss to those states because of the revenues derived from individuals who hunt big game in the western states. So on one hand, we have reintroduced wolves, and they are not the same genetic strain as the wolves that were in the west pre-settlement and which were sadly exterminated. They are from the Canadian wolf, which is a larger wolf. It's a more aggressive wolf. And the feeling is their impact on wildlife is much larger. So as we go to the election day on Tuesday, in the western states, there is a huge controversy over what to do with the future of wolves. Individuals who want to go hiking and maybe see a wolf are lined against individuals who hunt or cattlemen. And the bottom line is the reintroduction of a species, if not well thought out, has unintended consequences. And we're seeing that in the West with wolves. We've seen that elsewhere in the country. So it makes one really realize that before we go and reintroduce species in the name of let's bring back the natural ecosystem, we have to understand, are we bringing back the same species that was once there? And what are going to be the consequences to an economy that has radically changed? Big game hunting in the West is big, big business. And wolves are having an impact on that business that is significant in some areas. And now there are large amounts of money being spent by sportsmen through taxes to control the wolf population. So had this been thought out better when wolves were reintroduced, we'd be in a very different place today than we are now. On to another species that is going to cause havoc and already is causing havoc with wildlife populations, in this case bird populations, is a bird known as the raven. That beautiful bird that is a scavenger on the road and we see it flying around has become a huge predator of nesting bird eggs, particularly waterfowl eggs, particularly canvasback redheads, grebes, other birds that nest over water. What's going on is now being understood for the first time on the prairies of Canada, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, as well as states of North and South Dakota and Montana, where ravens were basically non-existent until relatively recently being the last 40 years. They've migrated north as the habitat has improved for them. They are not native to the region in any kind of numbers the way they're existing today. And yet we now, through information that's recently been gained by those doing waterfowl research, particularly led by the Delta Waterfowl Foundation, which is leading the largest study ever undertaken into the impact of predators on nesting waterfowl, we are finding that ravens are potentially the largest predator of nesting waterfowl eggs, canvasback and redheads in particular. And these are birds that were not predating on waterfowl until the last quarter century. So over millenniums, waterfowl evolved, and ground nesting birds and shorebirds and songbirds, they evolved in the prairies without ravens as a predator. So as I sign off today, one thing we all should do on Tuesday, we should go vote. And when you go vote on Tuesday, just take a moment to think about the person you're voting for, whether it be state or national. Do they have an interest in the things that you're interested in the great outdoors, hunting, fishing, camping, boating, national parks, whatever it might be? Do they have a position? Are they committed to an outdoor heritage in America that continues to grow and enables generations going forward to enjoy the great outdoors as we do? Thank you for listening. Be back next Sunday morning. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoors of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.